Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Live. Live. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hello and welcome to the Spirit of Life Weekly Service. My name is Dr. Doug Kelly, and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening. Glad to be here.
And we'd like to welcome all of those who are joining us live tonight, as well as those listening to the archive program. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this weekly service, ICMH Church also has several other educational programs, including EmpoweredRecovery.com, which offers help for friends and family of alcoholics and addicts, Paranexus.org, an association of anomalous researchers, MetaphysicsInstitute.org, our flagship school that offers bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in spiritual counseling, life coaching, healing, hypnosis, paranormal, metaphysical science, and many others. And Thomas Francis University, which offers standalone metaphysical courses and degrees at tfuniversity.org. To get us started, I'd like to read our abbreviated principles of belief. These are from the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. And the full versions of these nine principles of belief are available on the website at metaphysicalhumanism.org. These nine principles are: number one, do no harm, do right. Number two, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. Number three, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. Number four, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. Number five, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Number six, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. Number seven, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. Number eight, metaphysical education, practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And number nine, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. And again, you can read the expanded version of these on our website at metaphysicalhumanism.org. And there's also information there if you would care to join us as a member. So tonight, we're going to be talking about life after death. Another term for that is continuity of life. And Dr. Hunter is going to read the inner oracle card for that to kind of get us started.
Which is number 16 in the existential suit. And it reads like this: human consciousness transcends the physical body, allowing a new chapter of life to continue. Stability and peace is assured with the continuity and the flow of day-to-day life. There is reason to hope for a favorable outcome in the face of adversity or a difficult situation. You are a living example of the continuity of life. Cherished values will continue to live and grow. Sometimes we must allow a current chapter to close so that a new chapter may begin. And of course, that applies to, you know, life as we're living it, not just, you know, when we're done with this body and go somewhere else. So the continuity of life, the cycles within cycles within cycles.
Excellent. So we can understand that in a couple, well, several different ways, but two primary ways. I'll mention the first one, then we'll get into a longer discussion. The second one, the first one is Dr. Hunter just mentioned, is the chapters in our life. You know, we go from one point to another, and you know, one door closes, another one opens. We go through different aspects, phases of our life. That's all part of the continuity of life. But the aspect that I would like to talk about tonight is life after death, the afterlife. And I'm just going to share some of my thoughts, and Dr. Hunter will chime in, and I'm sure. And if any of you in the chat room would like to raise a question or make a point, you're more than welcome to. I will start this by saying that a few years ago, I really didn't know whether there was anything about life after death. You know, I was raised religious, and our religion taught that when you die, you're dead unless you're resurrected by God. In other words, you didn't go to heaven, you didn't go anywhere, you were just in a state of non-existence. And so when I left that religion, you know, I wasn't entirely sure. I mean, I wanted to believe, but knowing me, I needed some compelling evidence to believe. Well, over the course of several years, a number of paranormal investigations, dealing with a number of different psychics and just different situations, and looking at some different scientific laws, such as the law of the conservation of energy, meaning energy cannot be created or destroyed, it can only be transformed. And that kind of comprises the survival hypothesis. And so after doing all this research and then taking a look at everything we see around us, the planet, the universe, the cosmos, the fact that it's suspected that there's multiple parallel universes and that our universe could be just one of many, you know, there's just like there's one layer after another. When you look at it and then you think, gee, we're around for 70 or 80 years and that's it? Really? You know, it makes no sense compared to within the context of everything else. So from a reasonable point of view, from a reasonable basis, a basis of reason and rationalism, you know, this can't be it. There's got to be more to this. And the evidence, while it's not objective, we can't prove life after death objectively, like, you know, scientific tests and that sort of thing. But from a reasonable point of view, it is defensible. And so because we lack any objective evidence to prove it, I'm not going to just decide, okay, well, we don't have anything to prove it, so I'm just not going to believe in it. We also don't have anything to disprove it. So it's unfalsifiable. That's what we mean when we say it cannot be proven right or wrong or one way or another. And so I choose to believe that this is not it. It makes no sense, especially when you factor in consciousness. Consciousness is powerful. You know, the mind is non-local. It's not contained in the body. It's not contained in the brain. It's non-local. It operates through the body and the brain. And so when we die here in the flesh, then our consciousness moves on to the next, and for lack of better terms, I'd call it the next chapter. You know, people call it, you know, over the veil, across the veil, or on the other side, or in the spiritual realm. All those kind of indicate the same thing. But the thing that I want to point out about is that it gives us hope, because dying and being dead or in a state of non-existence makes no sense. It makes no rational sense. And so I choose to believe, because of the compelling anecdotal evidence, that we move on. And I think that brings a lot of hope. But here's the thing that I will speculate on, okay? This is speculation, pure speculation. And I wonder about these things. I don't have any definitive, conclusive answers on these, of course, but I think it's interesting to speculate. For me, in quantum physics, time is linear for us, but in quantum physics, it's not linear. There's the past, present, future, all the same thing. And so I speculate that perhaps in the next chapter, the other side, that past, present, future is all the same thing. Well, that kind of brings up some interesting things. For example, If that's true, if on the other side in the next chapter that time is past, present, future is all the same, that would mean that we're actually there right now. Because, you know, past, present, future, we're there. We're there with our loved ones. We're there with the people we care about and other people that we may not even have known from this life. But we're there. And that also would explain the Akashic record, which is kind of like a library of everything that has happened or will happen. And it doesn't mean because it contains everything that will happen, it doesn't mean that the future is set in stone. Because past, present, future are all the same thing, it's already recorded what's happened. So the reason I bring this out and want to talk about this tonight is because I think it brings hope. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty on this planet. We don't know when we're going to hit the other side. We don't know when we're going to die. You know, we try. There's a lot of uncertainty. But I do know one thing, that things will probably know a lot more than we know now on the other side. Dr. Hunter, any comments on this so far?
Well, this is how I have visualized consciousness and, you know, our embodiment in a way, is imagining you got an ocean of water and you take out one drop, and that drop of water has its own energy. You know, it's a hologram, if you will, of the whole ocean. But you put that drop back into the ocean, and then it's the ocean. So it's like, I think that each of us in this incarnation is a drop, if you will, of energy, that when we're finished with this body, we go back to that ocean of consciousness. I think that memory of past lives or future lives and that's been proven. I mean, sci-fi movies, some of it that, you know, 30, 40 years ago was just way out there. But now we actually do have those big spaceships and all kinds of stuff. So I see that as futuristic thinking, which could be tapping into a future type of life. So past lives, present lives could be tapping into that big ocean of consciousness. But as you said, we live in a linear timeline. You know, we have this evolution of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. So it's a perspective. And from the time I was very young, I had memories, lots of memories. I had affinities for places and affinities for countries. And that was long before the internet, folks. I mean, you had to go to the library to get information. But I just knew stuff. And I had lots of dreams that, you know, even prior to the age of 5 or 6, that had no other logical explanation except tapping into another time and space. So I think that we all have this, and we all have that capacity to remember more. But I think as we come into this life, we are grounding into the here now and learning to make this here now a better place. So no matter what is there in the beyond, what was there before or the future, it's that here now, as you say, maybe we are living it all right now. So maybe all of that other stuff doesn't matter. It is in this moment and expanding our consciousness to know that, and I reduce it all, because I mean, no matter where you research, it all comes down to love. And how we decide is an expression of love. And I know that sounds kind of, you know, cliche, but that's what I happen to see it as.
And I just want to expand on the whole drop in an ocean thing. You know, there's some religions and beliefs that basically, yeah, you know, we go on, but, you know, that one drop becomes part of the whole ocean. And that particular type of belief bothers me, because that means we lose our individuality. And I can't believe that we do. I think that it doesn't make sense to me that we're here, we're individuals here, but on the other side we're not. That just doesn't make any sense. And so I want to specify that when we move on, our individuality remains coherent. You know, who we are, our memories, what we believe, and all that sort of thing. So
I think the essence of who we are, you know, at a soul level, I believe that stays intact. But I also think that every lifetime is an opportunity for correction. And it's whether you've done bad things in a past life, even if it was inadvertent or by error, you know, I mean, And that's where I give hope for people who, like, do really bad things in this life.
That
they're returning to that consciousness where the essence of who they are can continue to transform and expand in its awareness. Like, that's my hope in that way.
And that's,
so I don't think we lose our individuality. I just think we have greater opportunity to expand and become more.
Well, I think that's very true, and that's assuming that reincarnation's true, which it might be. I don't know. But there's also some moral implications and all that, which I'm not going to really touch on. But there is one thing that you mentioned that I think is very, very important. Okay, so we're talking about life after death. I think there's solid reasons to believe in life after death, that we move on to the next chapter, whatever that entails. And we grow. We continue growing in new ways. You know, one door closes, another one opens up, sort of thing. And so that gives us hope for the future. That means that, you know, we're not here suffering like we are forever. So we have hope. But that being said now, we have a hope, and it's a wonderful hope. And if you believe in it, then it removes the fear of death. Okay, but what about the here and the now? What are we doing here and now to grow? You know, personal growth is not easy work. A lot of people don't like it because it's not easy work. And a lot of people shy away from it because it's not very easy to do. It takes a lot of work. So that's obviously not a good attitude to have. We want to grow. We want to learn. When we make mistakes, we learn from those mistakes. We gain new experiences, and now we can get along in life much better and more successfully. So I want you to think about what you're doing now. How's your life now? Where's it going now? What are your goals and objectives now for the future? How are you moving closer to those goals and objectives each day, and even in little ways? You know, the things that you do, are they taking you closer to or further away from your goals and objectives, from living a better life in the here and the now? Because that's important, and there's other things that go with that. You know, lightening the load for others when we can, that's paying it forward. Giving people the encouraging word, just encouragement. You know, that's the thing I think that's probably needed more than about anything. It's just encouragement. People are so discouraged. They wonder if anybody cares. And there are people that care. Unfortunately, there's a lot more that don't care. So we want to be part of those who do care and do as much as we can to show that care whenever we can, you know. And also keeping a balanced mind and a reasonable attitude toward it. Yeah, maybe we need an encouraging word and a friend doesn't say something or doesn't offer something. Well, rather than be too condemnatory, we just need to understand that everybody's got their challenges, everybody's got their path, everybody's got the things they need to learn, and as long as they're trying, you know, that's all we can expect.
You know, Dr. Angie said in the chat something I think is relevant to talk about. I think good and bad are assigned by humanity. All beings have the same options from the same menu, but based on how we view those experiences, we assign them as good and bad.
Yeah.
And it is a good point. She's just carried on to say, I don't think energy has the option of good and bad. Energy is just energy until we put it into a human form. And I think that in that, we have to consider that, it's a perspective that we would each have about what energy is and what the human form is, because in many ways it has a limitation, but it also has some great capacities, you know, when we're talking about energy, because we're actually in a body that has its confinements, if you know what I mean. In other words, I'm not going to grow wings and fly. So this is what I mean by, you know, an acceptance of who we are, what we are. And but good and bad, I think still, if you know, that's an existential kind of discussion, to be honest, I think. Because there is definitively bad. And there has to be. I mean, we can't say that murder is good. You know, so there are these definitions of, but they would, I guess, happen in an extreme of defining good and bad, and then the varying degrees in between. It's an interesting discussion, though.
All right, so I think Dr. Angie has a good point here that, you know, basically nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so, right? Let's expand that to consciousness. You know, energy is energy, things are things, and when we think about what's good and what's bad, it usually has to do with something somebody's doing, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. Murder's a bad thing. Building people up is a good thing. And yet, so nothing becomes good or bad until some aspect of consciousness acts upon it. And I mean human consciousness. That means a human being doing something, a human being making a decision to do something, whether it's good or bad. Michael talks about, you know, good things that are the best interest for all, ultimately evil or things are selfish, benefit one person over another, and on and on. And so if we think about it, nothing is right or wrong, good or bad, but thinking or consciousness makes it so, decisions make it so. I think that's a great point. And that means that we have a responsibility then to manage our consciousness, manage our decisions in a good way that helps people. Good points.
Yeah, and again, I am a believer in reincarnation, for the record, because I believe I'm in a here and now, but I have these memories, I have these other experiences, I tap into this whole other consciousness of myself, I talk to dead people all the time. The thing is, none of that really matters to my day. It's like that information is great to have. I think I'm tapping into this other consciousness, which can be explained in another way by quantum physics, and I totally accept that. But I have to see it in a way of past, present, future to be in the here now. And in this here now, how will I decide myself? With all this other information, and I keep gathering more information and assimilating more information, how will I decide myself? And how will I decide that love will act? Because I think that in and of itself is I think that's the ultimate goal of humanity, to be honest. I really do.
What is?
To know how love acts and to live in the consciousness of love as we define it to be. And some people think doing bad things is love. You know, I mean, but again, it's how we define love to be. So back to that other point of what's good and bad, a lot of people do bad things and they think it's in the name of love.
So, yep, that's true.
So we always use the term love. It's just the very basis of our nature and our communications. But what is that? We're deciding how that is. That's my point. We are deciding how love will act. In the here and now.
Points. Okay, so I'm going to move on to another topic here. I want to say that if anyone would like a card drawn, just put your name there in the chat room, and we'll get to that in just a couple of or a few minutes. I want to address a question that I was sent, which is an interesting question. And it has to do, it's within the context of respect for free will, specifically not giving unsolicited advice. And that's one thing we teach in our schools is to don't give unsolicited advice. And more specifically, that is obviously referring to adults. You know, don't give another adult unsolicited advice. And a lot of people will do that. In fact, that's one of the biggest problems with a lot of relationships today is they'll give each other unsolicited advice trying to control them, because that's what it is. It's a means of control. That's exactly what giving unsolicited advice is intended to do, is to try to control another person. We don't have the right to try to control another adult, regardless of who it is. If we don't want people telling us, what to do, then we should not tell them what to do. And so that's the teaching. That's the healthy concept of not giving unsolicited advice. And in the course material, I even talk about to parents with adult children to not give them unsolicited advice. Well, you know, obviously children, minors, typically under the age of 18, need guidance. You know, it doesn't apply to them because we're rearing them, we're training them, or should be. We're teaching them. But once they grow up, they become adults, and we need to back off, and we need to let them go out and skin their knees and learn their lessons. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't share a concern, but we have to be careful that we are not trying to exert some kind of control over our adult children. That's important. So the specific question that comes up is, okay, how do you define an adult child? Well, the age of majority is 18 years old in most places. Sometimes it's 21, but generally it's 18. So the question is, you know, is a person actually mature at that age? Well, it can depend. I know people in their 60s and 70s who have never grown up, and I'll bet you those listening to this know them too. Know people just like that. So, you know, can we say, well, gee, you know, at 18, you really don't know what the heck you're doing. You don't know where you're going. You don't have any life experience. You need me to tell you what to do. And I'm just going to say, for a parent to take that attitude is very tricky. It's very risky because they're essentially trying to control their adult, what are considered adult children. And I'm going to encourage you to not do that. You need to share a concern. Knock yourself out, but be careful in how you word it. You know, sweetheart, can I share a concern? If they say no, then you're done. Because, again, if you don't want somebody controlling your life, don't try to control theirs. If they say yes, you can share a concern, then do so. You know, I'm concerned about you. You know, you're doing this, you're doing that, whatever. I don't want to see anything harmful happen to you. I don't want to see this, whatever. Can I offer you some advice? And if they say yes, then go ahead. If they say no, you're done. And you have to respect them enough to let it go. Because don't forget, you were there once too. So was I. Heck, we were 18, 19, 20, even early 20s. We figured we knew it all, right? And It's difficult for a parent to do that at times. You want to give them advice. You want to tell them because you want to lighten their load. You want to steer them free of trouble or potential trouble down the road. But that's not how life works. They have to learn their lessons. And so regardless of when a person matures, whether it's 18 or 20 or 25 or whenever, you have to respect the law of control. If they are an adult, 18 or older, which is just a good rule of thumb, whether they've grown up or not, and a lot of them haven't, you have to respect that. Okay, I was doing that before my son was 18. I was, you know, approaching it in that same way, 16, 17. I tried not to interfere any more than I had to in those younger years. And you have to do the same. Give them some freedom. Give them the freedom to skin their knees, you know, bloody their nose here and there. They have to get up and they have to learn. That's part of the instruction. So I hope that sheds some light on it. It's just one of those things that we have to do. We have to allow them to live.
If I can inject just a couple of other thoughts that mm-hmm. I always say that because Michael made a comment in the chat room about the brain doesn't really stop developing until the mid-20s, and should that be considered the start of adulthood? I think that I have coined it the emotional rite of passage, which is somewhere between 18 and 21 or 22, that the emotions catch up. And very often, we hope we have a relationship with our kids that they say, what do you think, Mom? And then say, look, I don't know. This is what I might do, but I don't know what you might do. So you have to make those really good decisions, you know, for yourself in that way. However, I will step up to say sometimes a bad decision is a bad decision, and I am the mother, and I'm going to rule with a big frying pan. And I respect what you're saying, Dr. Kelly, but there is a point. My daughter was my second daughter was working at her job when she was about 19. And a very, very dear young man, I loved him dearly, who had such a crush on her, wanted to date her, wanted to marry her. And finally she said to me, but he's so nice, Mom. I think I want to go out with him. I said, no, I refuse. You can't. I'm not going to let you. I'm going to do everything I can to prevent this because he's Muslim. And Muslims don't like women to have their own voice. I won't be invited for Sunday dinners. If you two have children and you get separated, he's going to take your children and we're going to have a nightmare. So I'm putting my foot down right now. I'm educating you about culture. I'm educating you about this. And it's just not going to happen over my dead body. So, and it was like a whole wake-up call. Mom has spoken. And I think that there is a point when we do have to step up that this is going to be nothing but trouble and I will have my voice heard. So, and then if you still insist that you're so in love with that guy and you want to do that, then I'm the one who has to suck it up and know that I just lost my child. And that's okay. When we do have to respect, you know, that.
Yes. So let's take this all now. Let's try to put some perspective to it. There are always exceptions to the rule, okay?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, but as a rule, let your children make their own mistakes, your adult children here. And because 18 is the age of majority in most places, you can tell, I mean, and you just pretty much said this, you can tell your daughter all night long that she can't go out with this guy. She's 19, she can do whatever she wants, regardless of what you said.
Yeah.
Okay, and I understand, and I want another thing to be very clear that what Dr. Hunter said here, it was not a racist comment.
No,
you know,
not at all.
That could be construed as a racist comment, and I don't want it to be construed as a racist comment because it was not a racist comment.
It was
a cultural, it was a fact of culture.
Absolutely.
And so it had nothing to do so much with he's a Muslim as it did with what Muslims believe and how they basically treat they're women. And honestly, it's no different than 500 years ago in Christianity. And frankly, it's the same today in certain fundamentalist Christian religions. So I want that to be clear. But as a rule, don't tell your, you know, let your children do their thing. And if you need to share a concern, share a concern. And that could have been the approach you took too with her. Can I share a concern with you? And then you go on and say that. And
yeah.
Well, yeah, but that was before us, okay? I'm going to give you that one, okay? That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So if I was going to do that, I would do it exactly that way. Can I share a concern? You know, their cultural beliefs are much different and you may not be familiar with them, and here's the likely way it would go because they're very devout and I don't see it going any other way than this, and you will not be very happy if you're made subservient. So, you know, and so you can reason with them like that. And that's sharing a concern. And
you
that's
know,
the point.
I think it might be just a good point to bring up here that I have a mixed race family. I think the only thing shy in our family is Chinese or Asian. So, you know, there's everything Indian, black, white, we're all of it. So she would know that that's not a racist comment, and I really should have specified that when I said it. It's a cultural comment because of religion, and my kids weren't even raised around religion, and yet my son is a devout Christian. So that's interesting in and of itself. But they're in teaching them and sometimes putting our foot down to say, I got to educate you about this. And if you still think that, you know, love transcends all, well, then you got to knock yourself out. Like, that's just the way my son did, too. He was so devout in Christianity, And okay, there's a separation there, and I respect his decision. But I think when we have to stay out of everybody's way and respect that everyone makes decisions, but hopefully based on as much information as possible. I wish when I was younger that people would have had more discussion to give me more information. I think sometimes people don't want to offer up an opinion or offer a discussion for fear of telling somebody what to do. So it's a very fine line about, you know, geez, can I offer an opinion on that? Which is the segue into, I'm not telling you what to do. I just might have some more information that you might mm-hmm. like to know. So
yes.
those cordialities that are not oppressive, that are not infringing, I think are perfectly acceptable, as you're saying. It's mm-hmm. to make sure that it's done with respect.
Yes, and so I hope that sheds a lot more light on this topic because, you know, it can get into the point where we have all the good intentions in the world. Excuse me. And we have to be careful not going over to the dark side of doing right.
Yeah.
You know, do you really think you should eat that second piece of cake? Do you really think you should keep smoking? Do you really think you should do this, that, or the other thing? Well, we may have good intentions, but it's none of our business.
That's right.
And so we have to maintain our boundaries and not encroach on another person's boundaries. And that's the key. Do no harm, do right. And so we have to let people live their lives just like we want to be able to live our life. And everybody has their own level of awareness and their own mindset and all that. And so we have to respect that as long as they're doing no harm and doing right.
Yeah, I think that there are a few people who would like some cards selected. Shall we do a quick run through of? I think Jessica was first.
Oh yeah, I was looking through the chat and I couldn't even see any. Oh okay,
now there's
I see
Jessica him. And Daniel,
okay.
And
yeah. Okay,
was it Fran? I believe. So
I'll look while you read.
Okay, you look. I'm gonna pull one for Jessica here. I have my cards found out, Jessica. Reinvention, number 17. So interesting. Continuity of life is number 16, and reinvention is number 17. So this is for you, Jessica. Nothing is more powerful or transformative than self-reinvention resulting in a personal identity foundation shift. Far-reaching and profound, such a personal reinvention shifts the foundation of your self-concept from external to internal, which in turn is vital to your future success and happiness. Re-examine your core values, ensuring they are healthy. Answer the questions. What do I call a good day, and what else in my life should be reinvented? So, she says a divine pick. That's exactly what I'm doing right now, she says in the chat. That's exciting. Good for you, Jessica. So that's a good reinvention, it's really powerful stuff. So, who was next that?
Looks like Daniel, maybe.
Daniel. Nice to see you here, Daniel. I have Invoke the Counselor Within, number 19. Pretty close, I just turned a page. There are times to seek advice from others as a means of summoning your own truth, but the answers you seek lie deep within. Look there. This may be a time to remind yourself to not codependently surrender your power to anyone or anything outside yourself. Always determine your own truth and live according to the path that's right for you. So maybe that resonates with something in your life today. Understand that we can all relate to all of these cards and all the little messages, but this would be something he goes, wow. Okay, so that's yours. Invoke the Counselor Within, Daniel. So
hey,
who is next here?
Fran is next.
Sorry?
Fran.
Fran. You can probably hear my cat. He's saying, hello, I'd like outside, please.
You'd like
Think
to.
For yourself, number 22. Gee, I didn't even have to turn a page there. Okay, better understanding one's own mind brings one closer to honesty and self-responsibility. Thinking for yourself prevents being swayed by the potentially unhealthy thinking of others as well as outside popular belief simply for popularity's sake. If you don't think for yourself, you sacrifice your identity for someone else's identity. This may be a time to exercise critical thinking in order to best determine and listen to your own truth. He's a talker.
Okay, you're going to have to let him out.
I will.
Okay, so I'll talk about that for a minute while you let him out. So thinking for yourself, excellent advice. We all need to think for ourselves, and when we hear something that we may think, oh, that ain't right, you know, that's a cue that you might want to examine it, okay? And that's what I tell my students. Look, you can disagree with me all day long. It's fine. I don't care. I don't mind. But if you disagree and you want to argue it, or, you know, not argue in a mean way, but if you want to challenge it, fine. But you got to give me the reasons why it's not correct. And they have to be reasonable, and they have to be basically defensible. And so when you hear something that you may not agree with, do the same thing. Why don't I agree with this? What's wrong with it? There's sometimes I hear things and I think, oh, that's so wrong on so many levels. And then I think, okay, what specifically is wrong with it? And I have to think. And there's been a time or two when I thought, okay, I guess it's not wrong. It was my initial reaction. I was wrong. That whatever it was correct. And so we have to do that in thinking for yourself. Are you back?
I am. Is there anybody else who wanted a
Tabby.
Card? Hi, Tabitha. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. And that's number 35. Well, that's a very interesting card for you to have, Tabitha. Divine energy lives in all things. Diversity in nature and among humanity is not an evolutionary mistake. It is an evolutionary constant. This card advocates equality, peace, unity, healthy life skills, higher consciousness, and spiritual enlightenment. It is critical for our spiritual evolution that we display tolerance and equality toward others as well as ourselves. Remember, you are of divine energy. So that's almost a very introspective thing. So interesting. By the way, he took off and I couldn't let him out. He went in the living room, so now I can put him out. So you can take over.
That's fine. What was that last card once more?
That was one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny.
Okay.
Number 35.
All right, great. All right, so we're going to start wrapping things up now. And, we're going to put a headset on Cheech so he can be part of the program. He'll probably just say lots of meows. But that's cool. Anyway, we appreciate everybody's participation tonight. Lots of comments in the chat room. We appreciate the time you've taken to join us tonight. Let other people know who could benefit from it as well. And if you're listening to the archive, we thank you too. Thanks to Michael Kelly for producing the program behind the scenes. Thanks to Dr. Hunter for helping me out with this as always. And let's see, a couple of...
I provide a little entertainment. Cat
yeah,
in the background.
Entertainment. Yeah. Courtesy of Cheech.
Yes.
And I just wanted to mention to our students that the graduation ceremony page is now available. It was hidden, but thanks to Tabitha, who wrote me and conked me on the head, I hadn't unlocked the page. So it is now viewable. So you can go into the Student Center at IMHS and get that information. That's coming up here on May 7th. At any rate, I just want to let you know that. Another quick point is that I have now done audio recordings for the study material for courses B1 through B4, and I'll have B5 done in a day or two. So if you're in those courses, you can take a look at that and let me know if you like it. Until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Have a good night.
Good night.